few caveats before I begin today. The first is a reminder that it is the role of the minister to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. I expect to do some of each today. And secondly, a reminder that especially on matters of race, I am still learning, and so I very much appreciate your continued input and feedback to help me grow. In 2020, after the murder of George Floyd, I spoke one Sunday about how that horrific occurrence had shocked me into a greater awareness of the ongoing racial injustice in America. I shared in that talk how I had grown up in a pro-civil rights family, how we had always championed racial justice and equality, and that now that I have a black son-in-law and a brown granddaughter, that my concern about racism has grown exponentially. After that talk, I received some feedback from my daughter, Emily. She sent me a very loving, but also very carefully worded text message. You can tell, can't you, when it's carefully worded. And she began by telling me how much she loved the talk, and she appreciated my courage in giving it. But then she went on to say, basically to caution me against putting too much emphasis on my liberal upbringing and on the fact that I now have black family members, because it could be seen as coming across defensive or as deflecting any possibility that I may have, knowingly or not, perpetuated and benefited from a culture that is built on white superiority. In other words, it could be construed as my shielding myself from any claim or accusation that I, in fact, had contributed, wittingly or not, to racism in America. Well, this was not the feedback that I had been expecting. Let me tell you, she was not nearly as blunt as I have just been, but that's the message that came through to me, and I was upset. I was mortified. I felt that I had said the wrong things, that I had embarrassed myself, that I had failed, that I had misstepped not only in front of my daughter and my family, but in front of all of you. I worried that it would affect my relationship with my daughter, with my son-in-law, Rich, and his family, and that it would affect my relationship with the congregants of color here at Unity Renaissance. Looking back on it, I can see that it was an immense overreaction, coming from really wanting to avoid what was a very troubling thought or possibility. Looking back on it, I see with absolute clarity that it was a classic case of white fragility. White fragility is something I learned about in 2020. I learned about it from the book of that name by Robin DiAngelo, and she writes, this is what white fragility is, for those of you who don't know. It refers to defensive moves that white people make when challenged racially. It is characterized by emotions such as anger, fear, and guilt, and by behaviors including argumentation and silence, and I would add tears and becoming very upset. She goes on to say, these behaviors prevent any meaningful cross-racial dialogue and therefore protect racial inequality. Wow. That hit home. You know, looking back on my exchange with Emily, I could see it just as plain as day. Here was my beloved daughter trying to tell me something important, trying to give me information, trying to guide me and teach me and help me and actually looking out for me. And all I felt was hurt. You know, when I and other white people respond in this way to matters about race, it is almost an immediate and very honest reaction. but we need to recognize what it does. It shifts the focus away from the systemic issue of racism to our personal emotional well-being. And in so doing, it stops all discussion and all progress. African-American writer John Mehta put it succinctly in his amazing and very powerful 2015 sermon called I, Racist, that he gave to an all-white United Church of Christ congregation. And he said this: "The entire discussion of race in America centers around the protection of white feelings. The reality of thousands of innocent people raped, shot, imprisoned, and systematically disenfranchised are less important than the suggestion that a single white person might be complicit in a racist system. This is the country we live in. Millions of black lives are valued less than a single white person's hurt feelings." That's hard to hear, isn't it? Especially for us white folks. But he's right. He's right. Having become more aware of my own white fragility, I now notice it everywhere, in attempts to protect white people from feeling uncomfortable, in efforts to hide, deny, or minimize our country's racist history, in banning books that might be upsetting to students. All are tactics to protect white people from having to face the truth about racial injustice in America and about ourselves. It's as if we who are white have our fingers in our ears saying, "La, la, la, can't hear you." What a childish, irresponsible, and ultimately cruel response to people who are suffering and who need us. Those of us, especially for the white audience today, imagine for a moment if something really horrible happened to you and you went to tell your best friend and your friend said, "No, don't tell me. I can't stand to hear it. It's too upsetting." How would you feel? Abandoned? Minimized? Unloved? Invisible? It is my belief that's how millions of people of color feel in our country every single day. Rather than running from our discomfort, we who are white must learn to lean into it. We must become comfortable being uncomfortable. We can tell ourselves, if it helps, "My past mistakes, my blindness, doesn't mean I'm a bad person, but I can be a better one." That means being willing to examine our own embedded and often unconscious attitudes about race. It is hard work. It is often painful. But no one said the path to awakening was easy. We must educate ourselves on the many ways institutional racism systematically oppresses, demeans, and threatens the lives of our fellow human beings. We must wake up to the fact that black and brown Americans live in an entirely different reality from white Americans. We who are white have immense privileges, rights, and protections that are denied people of color. It is truly as if we live in different worlds. To illustrate this, I'm going to provide, with a little help, a demonstration. I'd like to invite Reverend Richard and David Kennedy to come help me out. They know about this. So just, you know, I'm not just bringing it on them. So what I'd like you guys to do is to just hold up your hands like so, like that. Perfect. And anytime I say something that is true for you, put one of your fingers down. Okay? Put a finger down if you have been called a racial slur. Put a finger down if you've been followed in a store unnecessarily. Put a finger down if someone has crossed the street to avoid passing you. Put a finger down if you've had someone clench their purse in an elevator with you. Put a finger down if you've had someone step off an elevator to keep from riding with you. Put a finger down if you've been accused of not being able to afford something expensive. Put a finger down if you've been bullied solely because of your race. Put a finger down if you've been denied service solely because of the color of your skin. Put a finger down if your skin color has ever worked against you in seeking credit or a loan. Put a finger down if a family member ever told you what to do to keep from being killed by the police. How many fingers are up? That's white privilege. And we must ask ourselves, what do we need to do differently in this society so that at the end of this exercise, both Richard and David have all 10 fingers up? That's our work to do. Thank you so much, you guys. You know, we who are white are shielded from racial profiling, from police brutality, workplace discrimination, lack of access to housing, and more. But now our eyes are opening to it. And once your eyes are open, you see it everywhere. A few weeks ago, Richard and I went to see the remake of West Side Story. Anybody seen that movie out? It's based on the 1957 award-winning musical. And for those who don't know, the story is about two star-crossed lovers, Maria and Tony, and the separation and tension between the Puerto Rican and the white communities. I remember loving this movie as a child. It won a lot of awards. But when I saw it this time, I was deeply disturbed, especially when I heard the words to the song, America. I always took it to be an upbeat, lively, kind of fun song, maybe because of the dancing. This time, the lyrics hit me like a ton of bricks. In the song, the Puerto Rican girls are on the one hand describing something that they love about living in America, and then on the other hand, the guys are responding with a different side of things. The lyrics include, you're going to be humming this the rest of the day. The lyrics include, I like to be in America, the guys. Okay by me in America, everything free in America, for a small fee in America. The girls sing, buying on credit is so nice. One look at us and they charge twice. Lots of new housing with more space. Lots of doors slamming in our face. I'll get a terrace apartment. Better get rid of your accent. Here you are free and you have pride, long as you stay on your own side. Free to buy anything you choose, free to wait tables and shine shoes. Life can be bright in America if you can fight in America. Life is all right in America if you are white in America. Hearing that now, I wonder, how did I entirely miss that before? And then, what am I still missing now? Perhaps that is the most constructive way for all of us, particularly white Americans, to go forward by asking ourselves, what have I not seen that I need to see? What do I need to do to put aside my white fragility or work through it to learn the truth? What am I missing? We must seek the answers and then be willing to listen, even when it's hard, because on the other side of that hard work is understanding and compassion and love and wholeness. What better place for this work than here at Unity Renaissance? Here, where we are all seeking to grow spiritually, here, where we have the opportunity to meet, befriend, and learn from people whose lives and backgrounds are so different from our own, here, where we can honestly share our questions, our confusion, our mistakes, our anger, our pain, and where we can seek answers together. You know, it has been a true honor to witness the heartfelt sharing on racial issues among our congregants in classes and gatherings, particularly over the past few years. It's life-changing. It's enlightening. It's healing. And it continues now with Donna Shannon's wonderful class on the search for common ground, which, by the way, you can still get in on. And I encourage you to take advantage of these opportunities. They truly are transformational. We have at Unity Renaissance a rare and beautiful kind of fellowship. In my mind, it is reminiscent of what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called the beloved community. The beloved community he envisioned was a fully integrated community of love and justice where brotherhood and sisterhood prevailed. I believe we are becoming just such a community. You know, in these difficult times, it can be easy to feel discouraged, but I choose to be hopeful. Change is in the wind. We are having deeper discussions, more honest conversations, and braver self-reflection. A new generation is here to lead us, including my Emily. Consciousness is rising and it can't be stopped. Let me say it again. Consciousness is rising and it can't and won't be stopped. Let us then, thank you, as the wonderful mystic and theologian Howard Thurman advised, take this into your heart. Look well to the growing edge. All around us, worlds are dying and new worlds are being born. All around us, life is dying and life is being born. The fruit ripens on the tree. The roots are silently at work in the darkness of the earth, against a time when there shall be new leaves, fresh blossoms, green fruit. Such is the growing edge. It is the extra breath from the exhausted lung, the one more thing to try when all else has failed. The upward reach of life when weariness closes in upon all endeavor. This is the basis of hope in moments of despair, the incentive to carry on when times are out of joint and men and women have lost their reason, the source of confidence when worlds crash and dreams whiten into ash. Such is the growing edge incarnate. Look well to the growing edge. May each of us go forward with courage, with stamina, and with resolve. And may we, each and everyone, be the growing edge incarnate. Let's turn now to our meditation. I invite you to take a deep breath in as you close your eyes and get comfortable in your seat. Release and let go. One more time, breathing in deeply, just nice big cleansing breath. And release. Feeling the goodness of Mother Earth beneath our feet and the sureness of being in loving company. We take a moment to reflect on our own life's journey, the ways in which we have learned and grown and possibly misstepped in our understanding of people of different races, people of different backgrounds and cultures. As we see, something has been guiding us forward at each step into greater understanding this innate desire that we have within us to truly see truly know, and to love more freely and generously without bounds. Something within us is urging us on. I invite you to connect with that presence in you in this moment. To ask the question, what is next for me to do? What is next for me to learn? To bring about greater understanding, love, and unity in our world. Take that into your consciousness for a few moments in the silence. Feel gratitude bubble up within us as we take the higher view of what is happening within us, within humanity, as we hold to that vision of the beloved community and move forward step by step to bring it into full expression. We are so grateful for this mighty spiritual work that we are doing, and we are grateful for each other. Thank you. Thank you, sweet spirit, and so it is. Amen.
Flow, Spirit, flow through me as I open up to be an expression of your unfolding peace. Show, Spirit, show through me as I open up to be an expression.
I want to thank you for, thank you. You're going to be singing it all day. I want to thank you for making this a safe place for me to give a talk like this. You know, I know it's not enough. I know that. But honestly, when I first came here 8.5 years ago, I never would have dreamed of talking about this. Never would have dreamed it. It's because of all of you. And your love has made it possible. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, this is the time in our service for the sharing of our love offering in support of this beloved community. There are many different ways for you to give to Unity Renaissance. Certainly those who are here, you're welcome to leave check or cash.